Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Chaos and Gunfire by Martha Carr and Michael Anderley. Narrated by Amanda Friday. Chapter 1. Alongside all the military vehicles lined up in the yard for inspection at Fort Bragg Army Base, the thick, fast-paced beat of heavy metal pumped through a portable Bluetooth speaker. The soldiers of Bravo Company hovered over the vehicles with their clipboards in endless forms that didn't serve a purpose. Except, of course, to keep them busy and remind the mechanics week after week that they still didn't have what they needed to repair a damn thing. Private First Class Idina Moorfield wasn't exempt from the endless, repetitive monotony of Motor Pool Mondays on the post. If it hadn't been for her unit suffering right alongside her, she probably would have lost her mind after the first month of inspecting each vehicle and filling out each report the same way every single time. After a scan under the open hood of a dissected JLTV, which was still missing the transmission dipstick, the oil cap, both headlights, and now the right rear tire, Idina checked off the boxes on her form and snorted. "This is ridiculous." "What?" Anderson's head popped up from behind a slightly less useless but more dented JLTV, and he met her gaze with wide eyes. She huffed out a laugh. "I said, this is..."
"For fuck's sake, Cashman!"
Anderson shouted, turning toward the LTATV two vehicle lengths away. Cashman stood beside that LTATV, staring at the open hood with the engine running like he could make all the repairs himself by sheer willpower alone. His clipboard hung limply at his side.
"What?"
Anderson pointed at the Bluetooth speaker on the ground behind the other soldier.
"Turn it down, huh? I can't even hear myself think."
"You don't need to hear yourself think." Idina's old roommate, Sergeant Cameron, thumped a hand against the hood of yet another vehicle that had been sitting in the motor pool since Idina first got attached to her unit here almost 2 months ago. "A brain-dead monkey could do this shit." "Hear that, Anderson?" Idina smirked at him over the hood of the JLTV in front of her. "You're uniquely qualified." The other soldiers in her unit laughed and snickered. Anderson flipped Idina the bird, then huffed out a laugh.
"Seriously, Cashman, turn it down."
"I'm in the middle of a high-priority work detail, asshole."
Cashman kept staring at the LTATV, slowly tilting his head.
"You turn it down."
Idina watched them with a crooked smile. "Yep, even fighting over what kind of music we're playing is more productive than the motor pool. This is..." A flash of glittering green light in the corner of her eye made her turn toward the LTATV. It pulsed again, coming from inside the vehicle itself. The only reason she could see it now was because her green light abilities had expanded over the last few months to show threats through physical objects, walls, doors, and now armored vehicles. "Cash," she called. "You might want to..." Anderson's clipboard clacked onto the asphalt before he stalked down the line of military vehicles toward the Bluetooth speaker.
"Nah, I got this, Moorfield. He wants me to turn it down? All right, dude, how about I shove it up your ass? That'll do it, right?"
"Guys, hold on." Idina studied the side of the LTATV, her green lights flickering faster and faster at thigh level. As part of the inspection, Cashman had started the vehicle's engine, mostly so he could study the same defective parts over and over again every week. Now the engine wasn't the problem.
"Jesus Christ,"
Cashman muttered. He pulled his phone out of his pocket and handed it to Anderson.
"If it'll get you to shut up, go for it."
Idina's flashing green lights burst into dozens of quivering streams like flames, and the scent of hot metal and engine oil hit her hard. It wasn't real. Not yet. But her lights were never wrong, and except for one dream she really shouldn't have been thinking about right now, this was about as preemptive as it got.
"Hey!"
Her shout made Cashman, Anderson, and her other unit members around her momentarily pause.
"Back up! That engine's running on..."
A heavy thump and roaring whoosh burst inside the LTATV. Fortunately, the dried-out engine with an additional fuel leak didn't shoot any broken parts through the open hood when the engine seized. Thick, billowing streams of first white, then black smoke appeared, though. Everybody took a few steps back, undeterred and even unsurprised at this point by anything on post breaking down, blowing up, smoking, or generally doing what it wasn't supposed to do.
Fuck.
Cashman groaned, staring at the smoke flowing from the top of the well-sealed armored vehicle. With a sigh, Idina marched toward the garage that happened to be closest to the dismembered JLTV she'd been inspecting. She snatched the fire extinguisher off the interior wall inside the open bay door, then jogged back toward the fuming vehicle. After that, she didn't need her flashing green lights. The first spray of CO2 extinguisher went all over the side of the LTATV toward the hood, throwing plumes of white mist and fluffy extinguisher all over the armored metal. Then she reached the front, held her breath, and squeezed the trigger nonstop, sweeping it back and forth across the smoking engine compartment. With cold white mist instead of smoke now floating through the air, Idina released the trigger and stepped back. A few surrounding soldiers laughed and got right back to work, inspecting and documenting all the same things they'd inspected and documented last week.
Which should have made this avoidable in the first place.
Idina turned to Cashman and Anderson, who stared at her with completely different expressions. Anderson smirked. Cashman sagged into himself, his shoulders hunching forward as she approached them.
Looks like you missed a few things.
She shoved the fire extinguisher against his chest and into his arms.
You should probably write all that down.
Anderson burst out laughing and slapped Cashman's shoulder before returning to his inspection.
You think it'll do that again?
Cashman asked. Idina shrugged as she headed back toward the half-disassembled JLTV.
I wouldn't bet against it.
Arming himself with the fire extinguisher, Cashman hurried toward the LTATV, turned off the engine, and immediately leapt back with his new weapon at the ready. The engine coughed and sputtered, tossing up another small burst of smoke, but it didn't get much worse than that.
All right, what the hell?
Sergeant First Class Remington stalked toward this part of the motor pool, spreading his arms. Idina looked back and forth between the frozen Cashman and her platoon sergeant, then bent to pick up her clipboard and pen again.
He's not going to answer. He hardly ever answers, and when he does, he sounds like he's making it up as he goes.
Fuel leak, Sergeant, she called. Remington gave her a quick look as he approached Cashman. But he was more interested in the soldier responsible for inspecting an LTATV that had put on a smoke show.
Cashman? Yeah.
The soldier turned toward his NCO, blinked furiously, and stood slightly more at attention.
Sorry. Yes, Sergeant? Fuel leak with a running engine? Yeah, and lots of smoke.
Only then did Cashman seem to realize he was the one holding the fire extinguisher, and he held it out toward the extinguishant, covering the vehicle.
But it's clear now. Uh-huh.
Remington raised an eyebrow, then pointed at the clipboard on the ground at Cashman's feet.
You're gonna add that to the report. Then you're gonna cut the music. It sounds like a dying animal.
Anderson and Cameron snickered and got back to their monotonous inspections. After another glance at the broken-down and leaky LTATV, Remington turned again and headed toward Idina. She pretended to be so focused on scrutinizing every piece under the hood that she looked oblivious to his approach. Probably. Her platoon sergeant stopped behind her and cleared his throat.
Moorfield?
Stepping quickly away from the vehicle, she turned and met his gaze with a nod. Sergeant?
You think because we know each other from basic means you can answer questions addressed to another soldier?
Idina pressed her lips together to avoid the smile threatening to break through. I think answering for Cashman keeps all our asses in line because he won't do it himself. They stared at each other, then Remington snorted.
I still don't know what I did to deserve getting stuck with you and my force comm platoon, too.
She lost the war with her amusement and huffed out a short laugh. I'd blame your ability as an excellent drill sergeant. And probably luck.
Yeah, shit luck. That's what it is.
They both laughed, and Remington looked over his shoulder at the extinguishant-covered LTATV. Then he shook his head and sighed.
All right, Moorfield. Some investigators are on their way to the battalion to speak to you. Finish up your inspection, then get the hell out of here so you don't keep them waiting.
Right. Thank you. He nodded
clasped his hands behind his back, then began a slow round of inspecting second platoon, inspecting the motor pool. He might as well watch everybody, now that he came out here to tell me about the investigators, and played it off like he came for the smoke. Idina returned to her vehicle with clipboard in hand. There's no way he thinks Cashman put out that fire. The guy can ruck 8 clicks with the whole team's gear strapped to his back and not break a sweat, but he's not exactly quick on his feet or in his head. But my platoon sergeant isn't going to tell me not to put out a fire someone else started. She looked quickly over her shoulder to see Remington's back turned to her as he walked down the motor pool. Now I get to be interrogated. After I completed my form for FIS, they don't talk to people for a simple security clearance unless they encounter an issue. Yeah, anything's better than this.
Hey, Moorfield. Anderson slammed down the hood of the vehicle in front of him and stepped around it toward her. I just thought of something. Remembering what she'd reported last Monday, because it was the same thing she'd been reporting on this particular JLTV for the last 5 weeks, she checked off all the same boxes and added a note for the tire missing this week. Congratulations. We should throw you a party. He snorted and stopped a few feet away.
I know. I deserve it. But for real, how'd you know that LTATV was about to smoke?
She paused, lowered her clipboard, then looked at the LTATV covered in extinguishant. Cashman still stood in front of it, staring blankly at the thing without moving a muscle. I smelled a fuel leak.
You smelled it.
Anderson cocked his head.
Over everything else we smell out here.
Idina shrugged. Maybe if you didn't spend so much time sniffing napalm, your nose would still work too. Grinning, she closed the hood of the JLTV and tossed the clipboard with her finished inspection onto it. Gotta go get my secret clearance.
Yeah, go tell them you can sniff out fuel leaks before they cause problems. They'll love that.
He snatched up her clipboard, and she hurried away from the motor pool to head toward the battalion building. I don't have anything to hide. Not that a few investigators would care about anyway. Not sure if flashing green lights that show me how to solve problems, and visions, and a few massive episode explosions count as national security risks. I mean, if they don't ask, I don't have to tell them, right?
Chapter 2.
Idina made it to the interview room at the 307th Battalion Building, aptly and redundantly named Headquarters and Headquarters Company, 10 minutes before the investigators entered the room. Normally, she would have gotten a little itchy, sitting in an empty area waiting for someone to show up, but the building was air-conditioned, and she wasn't at the motor pool. The two men contracted to pick apart her background, her family's background, and any potentially threatening affiliations the entire Moorfield family might have, smiled as they stepped into the room and immediately closed the door behind them. Idina stood and nodded. No, they weren't officers, but the best way to make a good first impression was to make everyone feel like they commanded the same respect. Until they proved otherwise, of course. Super weird to bring my brother's power meeting tips into an interview for secret security clearance, but okay, that's what I'm doing.
Private First Class Moorfield.
The first man extended his hand.
Ryan Danderford, and this is Henry Krupp.
Nice to meet you. After shaking both their hands, she stood at ease with her hands clasped behind her back. It was second nature at this point.
Let's have a seat, huh?
Danderford hiked up his khakis before sitting across the table from her, and Krupp unzipped a roller briefcase to pull out a reassuringly thin manila folder. He set it on the table and nodded.
You can start by telling us about your parents, Harold II and Annette Moorfield.
Hearing their names on an army base, after doing everything in her power at the time to get away from her entire family, brought a sour taste to Idina's mouth. She kept it together and folded her hands in her lap.
Sure. What do you want to know?
What they do, how close you are to them, how much you share with them about your life and your work here, how confident you feel in your ability to keep classified information from them, intentionally or unintentionally, that kind of thing.
She almost laughed. Right, because I'm so likely to divulge the Army's secrets and not mine. My parents are investment bankers, Mr. Danderford. My entire family works for Moorfield & Associates. My grandfather, 3 brothers, sister, sister-in-law, brother-in-law, all in the family business, and they're all shareholders.
Okay.
Dandiford nodded.
Are you close to any of them?
Not really, no.
How come?
A wry laugh escaped her. Mostly because I didn't want to be an investment banker. As for how much I share with them or would unintentionally divulge anything, I stopped emailing my family after I graduated from basic. I'm pretty sure none of them opened a single one.
Crop clicked his retractable pen before opening the file folder and quickly jotting something down. Idina glanced at the paperwork, but couldn't make out a thing in the guy's cramped writing.
Doesn't matter. No real contact with family is probably a good thing in this case. Unless they think that's the sign of a radical sociopath. Probably not.
And your siblings?
Dandiford asked. I'm the youngest of 5, she said with a tight smile. The unplanned youngest? I guess I'm closer to my brother Brian than any of the others, but that's relative. I wouldn't call us super close even then.
For a few seconds, Dandiford stared at her without checking his notes or making a sound. Crop scribbled something, and Idina sat straighter in her chair.
There's no way I said anything that would concern them. This is part of their job. Scrutinize everything and make the security applicant squirm for a few minutes. Unless they know something I don't.
As far as you know, Private Moorfield, Dandiford continued, are any members of your family involved in political activism, organizations with violence-based missions or prone to violence from their members, or what's commonly considered fringe belief groups?
She barked out a laugh and quickly cleared her throat.
No, sir. The only thing my family believes in is profit. That drives their business deals and their votes.
Have any of them attended political rallies or been involved, even inadvertently, in large gatherings of people where violence has broken out?
No, sir.
Is there anything you'd like to tell us about any of your family members that might be cause for further investigation?
Idina looked back and forth between the 2 men sitting across from her, her lips flickering in a tight smile.
They want me to volunteer information they might not have thought to check, which probably doesn't exist because this is their job, and they do it for everyone who needs clearance in the military.
Well, she glanced at Crop scribbling away before he paused and looked up at her. My brother Brian's a pothead. My brother Timothy is a functioning alcoholic with a limitless credit card. My sister Celeste and her husband have at least 2 offshore bank accounts they use for working with high-profile clients who pay them even more to bend a few fiscally responsible rules that I know of. But I have a feeling that's not really what you're looking for.
Dandiford chuckled. No, not really. Unless those high-profile clients are foreign leaders or foreign military.
Idina shook her head. I had access to the company books last summer. Didn't see anything like that. So as far as I know, that wouldn't be very likely. Not to mention how much time Harold Sr. spent lecturing us on the pitfalls of going into business with any government entity.
What would those pitfalls be?
Mostly that they're too cheap?
Crop snorted and finally stopped writing short bursts of notes to exchange a glance with his partner. Dandiford chuckled again and nodded.
I wouldn't call that a dangerous opinion either.
Idina let herself smile back at them.
My grandfather's closest experience with the U.S. Army. He knows how much money they don't want to spend.
After sifting through the very few papers in Idina's file one more time, Crop slid the entire folder down the table to rest it under Dandiford's nose. The investigator, who apparently did all the talking, scanned the items on them, then nodded.
Just a few more individuals we'd like to ask you about, starting with the house staff at Moorfield Manor in New Hampshire. I'm assuming you're relatively familiar with all of them, correct?
She blinked and shifted slightly in her seat, perfectly aware of how nervous that made her look. It wasn't the change in questioning that threw her off. It was the sudden emergence of her green lights flashing back and forth all over the file papers in front of Mr. Dandiford, plus the fact that she couldn't make out a single word on those papers to figure out what the heck her abilities were trying to tell her.
Some help? Sure, just read the classified files on every person in my life and on me, then what? I'll have some insane insight into whether or not I get my security clearance? I don't have anything to hide.
Private Moorfield,
Yeah, sorry. I didn't expect you to ask about the staff.
It's okay to be a little surprised during these interviews. A little nervous, even. Happens all the time. The house staff are part of your life, so we still have to ask about your relationships with them, too. She cleared her throat.
Honestly, they're more like family to me than my own family. I'd have to say the answers to all your questions apply to them just the same. Nobody's violent or radical. They hardly ever leave the estate because everyone lives there. I'm pretty sure the average age of the house staff is at least 60.
Sure, sure.
Dandiford nodded slowly over and over, like he was doing it to pass the time now instead of in real understanding. Whether that had anything to do with the green lights flashing even faster on the file in front of him was anybody's guess, but Idina didn't like the way this was going.
I'm missing something. I have to be missing something, or my lights wouldn't be sounding the alarm right now, and I can't even see it.
Even though she'd given the investigators a blanket answer for every member of the staff and all the questions they'd already asked about her family, Dandiford still went down the list of staff at Moorfield Manor. Mrs. Yardley, Master Rocha, the head gardeners Edgar and Mason, Todd the driver, and even additional kitchen and maintenance staff Idina didn't know as well as the others. The questions were the same for each, and her answers were the same. Harold Moorfield I was meticulous in vetting his staff before even inviting them in for an interview, and the habit had quickly passed down to his son and older grandchildren as well. Dandiford paused, and his tone changed slightly from just doing his job to this might be interesting. As far as you know, the same also applies to the head of staff, Mr. Archibald. Reggie? Idina couldn't help but let out a small laugh. Yeah, he's probably the least likely person to ever have an issue with authority. Or keeping secrets.
Not to mention the fact that I haven't even told him about the green strings in the air, or the visions, or the dreams, or healing myself.
Good. Dandiford withdrew his pen from the inside pocket of his sports jacket, clicked it open, and scribbled something else beside Crop's cramped handwriting.
Everything looks good on our end for now. I think that's all we need.
Okay. She tried to smile, but it was especially hard, knowing her ability wanted her to catch something she didn't have an opportunity to catch, because that was when Dandiford closed her file on the table and handed it back to Crop.
Opportunity missed. Now I'm going to go crazy trying to figure out what exactly they wrote in that file that I needed to see.
Crop paused with the folder in hand, opened it one more time for a final brief scan, then cleared his throat.
Tell us about your uncle, Richard Moorfield.
Idina and Dandiford both stared at the second investigator. Apparently, the man didn't talk much at all.
What does Richard have to do with any of this?
A knot tightened in Idina's stomach, and she scooted closer to the table, fighting to keep her back straight and as confident as possible. There's not a lot to say. He's my dad's younger brother and the only Moorfield I know who isn't still on my family's estate, except for me. Crop raised an eyebrow.
Do you know what he's up to these days?
Ha, no, sir. The bitterness in her laugh surprised her.
Yeah, I'm bitter. The only person in my family who could give me actual answers about what's going on, and he vanished off the face of the earth.
I haven't seen him in 9 years.
What about trying to locate or contact him?
She sighed. I wouldn't even know where to start. With a nod, Crop swiftly returned the folder to his briefcase, zipped everything up, and stood. Dandiford joined him and held out his hand with a perfectly genuine smile.
That's all we need, Private. Thank you.
She shook his hand, but couldn't help herself.
I'm sorry, sir, but is there something I should know about my uncle?
The man's smile widened.
I don't see a reason for it. We investigate everyone, Private Moorfield. Anyone who's ever had a connection with you at some point in time that could potentially come back around to affect your career and your mental well-being now. Looking at all possible risk factors. That sort of thing.
You think Richard Moorfield is a potential risk factor? Crop snorted as he jerked up the handle of his briefcase and headed toward the door. Dandiford rebuttoned his sports jacket.
Not at all. Just being thorough. You'll be alerted when you receive your clearance. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. For another 20 seconds,
All she could do was stand there and stare at the hallway on the other side of the open door. It's not like the Federal Investigative Services would cut corners and not look into my family. Even the one uncle nobody's seen or talked to in 9 years. That doesn't have anything to do with right now. There's no way they could know everything about Richard. They would have asked me about the green lights.
Slowly, she scooted in her chair, then walked around the table to head out of the small, cramped meeting room. Mr. Dandiford had said when she received her clearance, which was preemptively good news, especially with no reason for her not to receive it. Idina's gut still curdled as she walked down the hallways of the battalion HHC toward the main exit. It still felt like she'd missed something crucial, but there was nothing she could do about it now.
In the army, you're only told what you need to know. That doesn't mean I have to like it.
Chapter 3. Idina's security clearance interview finished up in time to make it back to Bravo Company and the dining facility in the barracks for dinner chow. Even after being at Fort Bragg for almost 2 months, she didn't really leave the base, unless she needed something the post commissary didn't provide, which was mostly high-quality art supplies. Honestly, she preferred it that way. She had all her meals available right here in the barracks. There were other options for meals on post, too, although Fort Bragg was gigantic and not exactly completely walkable, so not having a car was one of those general deterrents to eating anywhere else or heading out for a little variety. When her unit decided as a whole to go off somewhere else for morning PT, or had to meet at a different area of the base, she hitched a ride with someone on her team who did have a car. At this point, her platoon had noticed Private First Class Moorfield had a few habits that might have made her a little odd. If she was anywhere but in the army, of course. Everyone here was a little odd. Of course, they called her out on it.
Going in for the usual, Moorfield? You can't even taste food, can you? That's why the same thing every day. We're all heading out for pizza. Not you, Moorfield, obviously.
She laughed it off, because she didn't care. Somehow, staying on post even when she was off duty felt safer. The last thing she wanted was a repeat of her final night out at Fort Leonard Wood with her friends from basic. Burgers for dinner, good news about jump school, and seriously necessary quick thinking to explain away her ridiculous reflexes and the green lights spraying from her hand.
I stay here, I keep my head down, do my job. Episodes will stop being a problem. Haven't had any dreams or visions in the last 2 months, so I'm not going to make any major changes.
Sometimes, she liked to think this was a lot like what college would have been like for her, if circumstances had let her accept an incredible scholarship offer from Dartmouth instead of joining the Army as an E3. The barracks could have been like dorms, the dining facilities potentially mirroring dining halls on a college campus.
Yeah, a college campus where burning vehicles are normal. Nobody knows what they'll be doing on any given day. Your classes could seriously maim you, and everyone's trained for deadly combat.
Although she usually ended up eating alone, she was perfectly fine with that, too. That was how she'd gone through prep school, boarding school, and every day of her life living on Moorfield Manor. She thoroughly enjoyed getting her meals to go and sitting outside to watch Bravo Company going about their daily activities. Tonight happened to be one of those nights with a little more action than she'd expected. As she walked down the hall toward the back of the barracks, Cameron and two other soldiers from First Squad raced past her, laughing their heads off and jostling each other.
Moorfield!
Cameron slowed down so Idina could catch up, then nudged her former roommate with an elbow. Idina quickly tightened her grip on her to-go dinner box so it didn't launch out of her arms.
Guess what I just heard?
You hear lots of things, Sergeant.
Idina tried to hold back a laugh. They'd been roommates for all of 10 days, while Cameron waited for an available NCO apartment to open after she'd received her promotion. The awkwardness of that rank transition was long gone, but Idina couldn't quite manage not to mess with the other woman when she could. Just a little. Cameron clicked her tongue.
You think I'm talking about you, don't you? Think you're special, Moorfield?
I don't know about special, but I am hungry, I know that much.
The sergeant snorted.
Second platoon's incoming boots are here. You're going to watch this, right?
Idina groaned, half in discomfort and half in amusement.
I can't say no to that.
That's what I thought.
After slapping Idina on the back, Cameron raced off again.
The sound of the metal back door shoved open and clunking shut again echoed through.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?